I want to welcome everyone to this very exciting open line program. Lighthouse is celebrating 23 years in business and just entering our 10th year of doing open lines. We have a few new exciting changes at Lighthouse. First, we have a brand new 2017 open line format that comes with the launching of our new website. You can also find an archive of past topics on the publication event tab. Over the last 10 years, we've covered almost every topic you can imagine that you're going to face in business. This one is going to be one of those. And you can feel free to browse and listen and look them up. Our second book, Cracking the Business Code, is available on Amazon, or you can click on the book icon on our homepage. Plus, in 2018, and yes, we do plan ahead, we will have our third book out, Cracking the Team Building Code. And in around 30 days from now, we're going to be offering skills testing assessments. So you can stand by for that one, but we've been asked by a lot of clients to start offering that, and we attempt to stay in tune with the needs of the marketplace. Our topic today is planning for the next recession now. And we have a panel discussion with some amazing panelists who I'll introduce in just a few minutes. My name is Dana Barocca. I'm the CEO of Lighthouse Consulting Services. I'm going to be hosting our program today. We have just a few housekeeping items for those of you joining us for the very first time at Lighthouse. Everything we do goes back to our mission statement, bringing effective insight to your organization. We do this through our in-depth work style and personality assessments to raise the hiring bar. We assist companies with a variety of services, including interpersonal coaching, team building, stress management workshops, and much, much more. We have an office in Taiwan, so if you have an operation in Asia and would like to get leadership coaching for them or providing ideas for how to interact with U.S. companies, just let us know. Our Keeping on Track Open Line series is in response to the calls we get both domestically and globally from clients so we can face today's business issues. Our goal is to make this an interactive program, so on your screen you're going to see an area you can send questions or ideas during our discussion. We'll attempt to respond to as many of you as possible. We do have a lot of people on the program today, so we'll try our best. Or you can write down a couple of questions. We're going to open up the line at the end of the program. You can talk directly with our panelists. I want to introduce all of our panelists now. First, Larry Cassidy. Larry has been a Vistage chair for 30 years. I was fortunate to go to his 30th Vistage dinner celebration, which was amazing. He currently works with over 50 executives every month and has facilitated over 1,500 executive group meetings and has participated in over 15,000 face-to-face discussions with chief executives about all aspects of their businesses. He prepared his journey at Miami University in Ohio and Northwestern, got his MBA as a Marine Corps officer. With public companies, he worked with General Mills, Quaker Oats, and PepsiCo. He's worked with private, family, foreign-owned businesses in the 1980s as general manager and CEO of local companies in Southern California. That's Larry. I want to introduce Rob Scher. Rob is a founding principal of CEO to CEO, a consulting firm of former chief executives that improves the leadership infrastructure of mid-sized companies seeking to accelerate their performance. He was chief executive of Bentley Publishing Group and steered the firm to become a leading player in the decorative art publishing industry. Rob speaks frequently and has published extensively on the successful leadership traits and skills of leaders of mid-sized companies. He is a regular columnist on Forbes.com, has numerous posts on Harvard Business Review online, Entrepreneurial.com, and CFO.com. He's authored two books, The Feel of the Deal, How I Built a Company Through Acquisitions, and his newest book, Mighty Midsize Companies, How Leaders Overcome Seven Silent Growth Killers. He has also published, he also has his own newsletter he puts out, The CEO Insomnia Factor. Rob received a BS degree in business administration from Haywood State University. And during that time, he also ran a small business. and an MBA degree from St. Mary's College, where he was recipient of the Jack Saloma Award for Student Citizenship. And from 1995 to 2000, he taught MBA and executive MBA courses at St. Mary's on growing entrepreneurial businesses. I'd like to introduce Paul Walker now. Paul is the CEO and founder of Genius Stone Partners and works with domestic and international companies to improve their bottom line today and planning for the future. Paul is one of the few CEO coaches who has worked with numerous Fortune 500 CEOs and their key staff members for over 25 years, along with mid-cap companies. Some of the organizations that Paul has worked with include Starkist Foods, Vaughn's Grocery Stores, New York Life, Anne Klein, Rockwell International, countless manufacturing companies, global utilities, service, and consulting organizations. Paul is the author of the best-selling book, Unleashing Genius, and his new book, Invent Your Future, Seven Imperatives for a 21st Century Environment. I feel very privileged to have Larry, Rob, and Paul with us today to share ideas that will help each of us in preparing for the future and for dealing with today's business issues. Registration will begin for our next program at the end of this program today, Driving Performance through Your Sales Compensation Program, 10 Musts. Let me lay out how we're going to work this today with our panel. Going to read off a topic. Each individual will have 1 to 3 minutes to respond. This is kind of like a debate almost, but it's not a debate. I'll field any questions that come in. And as a framework, each of the panelists do believe there is a recession coming up down the road and that we need to be proactive in planning and that this recession will to start as soon as possible. The Vistage economists, the Bulio brothers, are projecting towards the end of 2018 or 2019, we'll beginning to enter into the next recession. Their projections are will be about 10 to 12 months or so. Their thought is that if you're prepared, you can thrive. Most people that aren't, and all of a sudden it hits them, they can get very, very scared and miss out on wonderful opportunities. So today is not about talking about fear. It's about being planfully minded to take advantage of the opportunities that a recession can bring. We are having some technical problems with our hosting service today, so we're not going to be showing slides, but I'm just going to read off the different topics for today. So let me throw out the first topic. What's the biggest lesson learned from past recessions? Who would like to start? Everyone's quiet.
I'll start. So this is Paul Walker. So I think the biggest lesson is what you said, is that people get caught by surprise, number one. And number two, when one starts doing a scenario planning process to tighten up the organization to prepare for a recession, even if it doesn't come, they find a lot of areas that are overstaffed, a lot of dead wood. And you know, most of my clients, even though a recession has yet to hit, have already prepared, and they're already using that scenario plan to make their business more effective as it is. So I think the lesson is, you know, you should be thinking about this all the time.
Okay. Good.
Yeah, I would. This is Larry. I agree totally, Paul, and I would piggyback on that. That the biggest lesson is don't get caught by surprise. And the next, I guess, the next biggest lesson is shame us on us if we get caught by surprise. Because this happens every 6, 8, 10 years. And I'd actually turn it back to the folks that are listening. I suspect that amongst the listeners and the various companies listening that the biggest lesson may vary. And I'd suggest that you go back to where nobody wants to go, which is, you know, think back to 8, 9, 10. And what were the biggest problems that you had to repair? Because as Paul suggests, you weren't taking care of business all along. I mean, I'll throw out a couple of them. You know, have some money in the bank. It's very hard to get lines of credit when you need them. And secondly, you had to let a lot of people go. And if you're anything like my clients, they told me I shouldn't have had a lot of these people in the first place. So
yep.
Those would be a couple of things to think about. But I suspect each of you has, if you really think about it, and go back and think about what were you laying in bed at 2 o'clock at night staring at the ceiling and fretting over, you know what you ought to be looking at right now.
So, you know, I think I agree with all of the comments, but I'm sitting here thinking back, and thanks for that, Dana, over probably 4 or 5 recessions that I've steered a business through, and the lesson that keeps hitting my head is that a recession isn't the same, and it isn't a single thing. It's a series of decisions that each of us that lead companies have to make each month. And the worst one, I think, was, you know, we've just had a bad month, the recession started, but maybe it's going to be better next month. Maybe I'll get another order. And the uncertainty of knowing whether it's a 3-month dip, or is it a 9-month dip? Is it a double dip? In some senses, the last one was easier in that it was so clear that it was hard and furious that everyone knew they had to just cut like heck and survive. It wasn't this sort of creeping in doubt, maybe the next product will work. And so we have to really think about how we're going to steer our way through what is a very uncertain chain of events that threatens to take our business down. And that makes scenario planning more interesting in the one sense in that we can't tell. And it also makes a very strong comment about how we have to run our businesses every single month in recessionary times.
If I can, you know, real quickly, if you take a look at all of the recessions starting way back in the late 70s, early 80s, every single recovery over that time span has taken basically an additional year or more. So we used to come out of them back then in 4 years. Now it's 7 or 8 years. And I think that's something you need to think about in terms of preparing your company to ride it out. It's not just, this will be 12 months and then we'll be back to normal. I mean, look what's happened. This is a brutal one, but look what's happened and how long this has taken. I think people are saying 7 or 8 years. It used to be 4 years. So you got to be ready for a longer haul.
Yeah, and that's the factor there is 20, 25 years ago, we were not competing with China, Japan, and Europe. They were weak sisters. We were the big dog. Today, we're competing with them. And we haven't really adjusted our mindset beyond World War II. There are other powerful economies that we have to compete with. And we're kind of in la-la land. Oh, yeah, it's America. It's a big blah, blah, blah. No, it's a different environment. That's why it takes longer to come out of these recessions, because our competitors are not sitting back and letting us win.
I had asked this a number of CEOs just prior to the big recession, because Vistage members were all notified 2 years prior to this was going to hit by the Bulio brothers. And so the CEOs responses were they looking back, they missed the opportunity by 6 months. So in other words, they were holding on to people 6 months too long. And they said the impact is not so much the salaries, it's the health insurance and all the rest that goes along with it. So they said if and when we enter the next one, they're not going to do the 6 month thing. They're going to make a decision much, much quicker. In order to preserve capital. Let's move to our next question about team members, because it's always a tough one for people, because you have people that are trained. There's been a lot of money that's been put into recruiting. What are your guys' thoughts on team members and having to make cuts and during a downturn?
So I'll start this one off, Rob here. And you know, I applaud what everyone's saying, that they will cut people faster, but my experience has been with many, many companies is when the time really comes, it's not nearly as fast as they would hope. And I think if we imagine that this recession comes on as clearly and concisely as the last one, it makes our jobs easier because there is no alternative. But usually they come on a little slower and there's a little slippage and there's that uncertainty and gee gosh, maybe it's not really the start of a recession. It's just a tough quarter, and maybe it's just me and not them. And so, you know, we tend to hesitate. I think that we should always be clear on who our best team members are and who our worst are. We should always be working to upgrade the worst one level or another. And if we do it too early, we're just all the benefit from having a little more productivity and profit to, if we choose, put in our bank account to weather a downturn when it comes, or to work on developing a new product. So I think that we always have to be thinking about that. We always have to look at it from that angle. That being said, businesses, when times, maybe at all times, but certainly when times are uncertain, have to stay profitable. And that's how you keep things strong. And so I think the one mantra that I would love to see CEOs really stick to is being profitable every month. And if that says I have to cut my bottom three people because we've had a bad month last month and things are even the slightest bit weak, make those changes every single month, small if necessary, rather than waiting until you've blown your entire bank account or too much of your bank account hoping, and then have a massive cut. Much, much better to just stay strong each month, each quarter.
Yeah, and I would add the other side of the coin is you should always be building a high-performance team. You should always be developing every employee to a high standard of performance, and then you're ready. And if you've got a high-performance team, you're going to be anticipating correctly, and you're going to be ready to do the right things. And I think the more you put the hurdle up, the people on the bottom are going to drop out. Now, that's complicated in good times by the fact that sometimes it's hard to find good people. Things are, even today, my clients have a hard time finding good people because unemployment is very low. And so there's that balance, right? So the only solution that I see is you take the existing people and really coach them and develop them, develop their leadership skills, develop their business skills, because you may not be able to fire the bottom third and hire some high-performance people because they're not available.
Yeah, I'm kind of listening. This is Larry, kind of tying what both of you have said together. Rob, I'm in the kind of the disbeliever camp that people will have learned from their last lesson and start cutting intelligently and rigorously. And it goes back to one thing Paul said. I'm hearing all the time how hard it is to get good people. And when people start telling you you've got to cut and your life is built around trying to get good people, it's just emotionally really, really hard for people to do. And so my experience is they weren't 6 months late. Some of them were 9, 10, 12 months late. And for all you guys listening, I'm going to tell you, when things do turn down, a nickel saved today is it's like it's worth a dollar tomorrow. I mean, you have to – what you're paid to do is make those tough decisions. And nobody likes them, but it makes a big difference because it leaves money in the bank for you to capitalize on your competitors' misfortunes a year to 18 months later.
That's
a great segue into the topic of money, accounts receivable, credit line turns, balance sheets, margins, et cetera. What are your guys' thoughts?
Don't run out of it.
Keep your banks happy.
The first three rules are don't run out of cash, don't run out of cash, and don't run out of cash. And you got to be thinking about that right now.
And how often should people be doing a deep dive into their financials?
Monthly?
Weekly.
I mean, so, you know, here's my thinking is that as we believe we're approaching a downturn, liabilities, right, a debt becomes more and more dangerous. If I have to scale a business down to survive on much less top line, much less income, you know, that works great for all my variable expenses, but debt does not automatically go down. And so if there's too much fixed debt, it's dangerous. You can sometimes end up where you can't cut into profitability because of that. So now might be a time to try to reduce the debt load so that you have the flexibility to pull back when you need to. So the other thing that I think is really, really important is that even if we have a strong balance sheet and we've built up our cash and our assets and so on and so forth, that we're really clear with ourselves about how much of that is to be used to slow down, meaning, oh, no, there's a downturn. I've got too many people. I've got to spend some money to lay people off. I've got to spend some money to downsize. That can take some cash. And have a clear limit on that, and that is not 100% of the cash and the balance sheet assets that I have, because I need to reserve some for surprises. And then, as I think Larry said, I need to reserve the bulk of it to step on the gas, to take advantage of the downturn, or just to fund working capital needs once we start to expand post-downturn. If I blow it all paying people and slowing down, I won't have what I need to survive and grow post-recession.
To me, this is why the development of your leadership is primary, constant upgrading in their skills, constant development of their skills. There's no substitute for that, because as a CEO, you can't know everything, and that's why you have an executive team. That's why you have managers on the front line, and being able to develop their abilities, their consciousness, so that they can provide early warning is so important. And that will help the banks, because they will see you responding early to things. Not that the banks are opposed to increasing your rates for any ridiculous reason. So, I mean,
Paul, I would second your comment on people for another reason. If I were to ask everybody listening to the program today, stop a minute and think about your organization. Who are your heroes? Everybody listening knows who their heroes are in their company. The heroes are the people that always step in and save the day, get stuff fixed, go the extra mile. We've all got them. Think back to 8, 9, and 10 when you did cut. You had to ask the people that were still there, hopefully your heroes, to do twice as much, more than twice as much. People were doing 2 and 3 jobs. One more reason to be darn sure you've got a cadre of really good, really loyal, really capable people who you take care of, so that when you have to go into the alley for the alley fight, they go with you.
Ooh, yeah, good, well said. Good point. We've talked about money, being conservative. Let's switch gears here a little bit. I was reading something from the Bulyeo Brothers, the Vistage Economist, and they're suggesting since that 2017 is going to be fairly strong, and that this is a good time to pedal to the metal. Go after target markets that you want to approach or prepare to. So during a downturn, you're ahead of the curve. What are you guys' thoughts about that?
I would agree with that. I think that, you know, while things are going good, is the time to bring out new products and enter new markets and establish yourself in those markets, establish your brand in those markets. Because generally, in a recession, the best brands perform best. And if you, because brands are market by market, and as you jump in when things are going well and get some strong markets and build a strong brand in those markets, it's going to help you defend against recession.
Okay. Yeah, and go ahead. Sorry.
I was going to say, while I don't fully disagree with that, you know, I always worry when CEOs go pedal to the metal. That sounds like draining the balance sheet, spending money fast and furiously. And so there's a tricky balance. If we want to strengthen up, we have to be really strategic about what we do. I think also there's a question about what are those other markets. And so, you know, I have one client that said, look, now's the time we're starting to reach back out to the government sector. They do work for private sector and government sector. Government sector is hard to deal with, low margins, but they're steady through most recessions. And so we're starting to reach out, take some small contracts, sort of reassert ourselves in that area, not trying too hard because we don't want to use up our very limited bandwidth on low-margin customers, but we want to do just enough so that we're in place. That seems smart. It's not a huge stretch. It's incremental activity. It's still profitable, but not nearly as profitable. But and so that to me makes sense. Or if there was a different industry that was counter-cyclical. But I think, and I agree, you have to start early to give it a chance to scale up to make a difference for that matter. But I'm not sure this is the time to make that big leap and try to go into that whole new market that you're not very familiar with. We have to be frugal and smart at the same time.
Okay. Yeah, I would agree. I think that, this is Larry, I think that a lot of those markets you want to dive into because you're not getting as much business in your current market, well, they're having trouble too. They're not buying as much. And the people that have relationships and supply contracts are ever more competitive trying to hold on to that. But I think that recessions tend to exhaust companies and exhaust their ability to really capitalize at the end of the recession. We talk a lot about how do you survive the recession. There's a lot of companies get in trouble at the end of the recession because they've drained their cash. They haven't done the things you guys are talking about doing, and they can't capitalize. And so what I would be doing is I would be beginning to build relationships as opposed to trying to sell so that I could pounce with some money in the bank. I could pounce when things start to get better. Because a lot of current suppliers will be in trouble and can't respond effectively. That would be kind of my, maybe a little esoteric, but that would be my strategy.
Very sage advice from everybody. Be thoughtful, be strategic, and be wise. Larry, you have a story you wanted to share regarding P.F. Chang's.
Well, yeah, I like reading and hearing about what companies do. I mean, as opposed to all of the philosophical stuff, what do they actually do? P.F. Chang's, I suspect a number of you have gone there for chow. They did a couple things in the last recession. A
couple of my clients were executives there at one time.
Yeah, well, maybe this was partly your idea, Paul, but the things that were written up that they did that I thought were very effective is they went down. By the way, this is going to go back to Paul's comment that if you do these things and you get ready, you learn a lot of things you ought to be doing every day, not just because a recession's coming. One of the things they did is they went through their income statement and they went line by line and they tested every single expense against one criteria. Did it affect the dining experience? Did it affect the overall experience when Larry was at P.F. Chang's? And if it did, it may still get inspected, but it probably survived. If it didn't, it had trouble surviving. Now, there are indirect expenses that affect that. But and that would work a little differently for each of your businesses, but I thought that was I talk to my clients about doing that all the time. The second thing they did was they cross-trained. They required everybody who worked in their store to be capable of doing at least two jobs. That allowed them to have a somewhat smaller workforce, but it also allowed them to cover. I mean, think about the flexibility that gives a manager. Now, it takes some time, and you got to go through some lumps to do that. Getting everybody cross-trained is not necessarily efficient, but there's a huge, huge payoff for doing both of the things that P.F. Chang's did. And I'm sure there's other great stories out there. If some of you people that are listening did things that really worked well, it'd be cool if you sent an email into Dana and shared those with him so he could share them, with his entire client base.
That would be
another must along those same lines, Larry, is the whole thing of, succession planning so that every manager, every executive has one or two people identified and trained to take their place, which is hard to do because executives tend to want to protect their turf, but my clients are very much involved in who's going to replace you. What's the succession process? What's the development process? Because first you need that to grow. You know, if you're a growth company and you don't have a strong succession process, then you're not going to have the executives to grow the company. And second of all, like you said, Larry, it ties right in across training and when a recession comes.
Well, absolutely. We love to run around talking about how the CEO or the owner's number one goal is making the shareholders wealthy. The number one goal is the survival of the enterprise.
That's right.
That's number one. You don't get to do all the other things if it goes away. And so you're really talking about the survival of the enterprise.
That's another great segue.
Yeah.
We have some clients that run drills, maybe twice a year, sometimes once a year. I wanted to get your thoughts on it and what they run the drills around or organization, if their organization lost 25 to 30% revenue in 1 month, or they went the other way and went up. What are your guys' thoughts on that, running drills?
I think it's important.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
So Vistage had a speaker for a guy named Walt Sutton. You may know him or know of him, Dana. And he doesn't speak anymore. But in his presentations to hundreds of Vistage groups, tech and Vistage groups, talking about planning, his recommendation was that you take the last afternoon of your planning session and you develop a plan for what do you do if you lose 40% of your business. That was his number. I'm not sure how many people took it totally seriously, but a lot of my clients and members did versions of it. And does everybody remember that a lot of companies lost 40% of their business in the last recession? That was kind of a natural number. And his point was that if you figure out what you're going to do when it's not happening, you will figure it out carefully, factually, and unemotionally. If you try to figure it out when it's happened to you, it's really hard.
Yeah, and you have to have, 10%, 20%, 30% triggers. So when our business reaches this trigger, everyone on the management team knows exactly what they're going to do because you've already put a scenario together for that, and you pull the trigger and everyone acts. And they don't have to plan anymore. They know exactly what they're going to do. Sure, they have to have some initial adjustments. But that does two things. One, people are prepared, right? And two, nobody wants to drop down 10, 20, 30%. And so it presents a certain reality to the management team. If we don't hit our target at the end of the year, if sales are dropping 10, 20%, I'm going to have to lay people off. I'm going to have to make some real serious changes. And what that does is motivate them, to find revenue, to find ways not to drop. So it has two effects. One, they're prepared. All you got to do is pull the trigger, plan B, let's do it. Everyone knows their role. You've identified your high-performing people. But one of my clients, who I mentioned, has already done that. And again, they found things they wanted to do anyway, and they just did them, and the company's that much more profitable. So
that's phenomenal. Rob,
yeah.
What are your thoughts?
So I agree we have to look at the downside and lay out some plans for it. But even if you do the planning, and I totally agree you should, it's always hard when it actually happens because most of the time in my experience, both my own experience and my clients, it doesn't present as clearly as in the drill, like, boom, we're down 40%. The last downturn was kind of like that. It was clear. But I have to tell you, even in my own company, I survived, air pockets, I used to call them, for 2 months, for 3 months, and then, boom, it came back. And I was glad I had my team. And every one of those months, is it an air pocket or is it real or does our product suck? What happened? And so, what I come back to is really understanding the underlying assumptions that you're making that drive the business and to have in place a process that regularly checks those underlying assumptions. And, you know, sometimes it's as simple as having conversations with clients in a program regular basis, where you're not just saying, are we doing okay, but you're asking about the industry and the marketplace and what's happening for them. There's a sort of a rigor, at least for mid-sized businesses, around collecting information and data, so that when that month happens that's down 8% and then another nasty month after that, you have a much stronger opinion and position about, is this a fundamental problem in our business? Is it an economic problem? And you'll be a bit more emboldened to make the right decision rather than untested assumptions, uncertainty, and it's always so easy to do nothing rather than to take an action that has strong consequences. So test those assumptions regularly, understand what they are, so that you're better able to act quickly when you need to.
Yeah, and I would add to that, you need to be strategic with your vendors and your customers. So as the economy slows down, you need to be a team with your vendors to help keep them in business, which might mean lowering their prices to you, and your customers. What can we do to help you? I know during the last recession, one of my clients really made a point of that. All their customer-facing people were building strong relationships with their customers and their vendors. And as the recession approached, it was, what do we do, all of us, to survive this? And that way it wasn't just internal. It was, they worked with the vendors, give them better pricing. They worked with their customers to give them better pricing and or service. And they were able to maintain, I think their competitors lost 40 to 50% of their market. They lost 10 because they were so close with their vendors and so close with their customers. They saw their customers and vendors as part of the team. I think that's really important to prepare in that regard.
That's a good point. That's actually how OpenLine, our web conferences, came about. But just before the big recession hit, the Boulay brothers had given some very specific times and also things to look for, and I started to see those things happen. And I remember one day the thought came, what can we do from Lighthouse to share with our clients that would benefit them through very difficult times? And the thought came, hey, create a webinar program for around training and topics that companies may not be able to afford at this time that would be able to assist organizations. And sure enough, as the recession ended and all this kind of thing, everyone's settling down, I was getting emails from companies that weren't clients before saying how helpful the open lines were, and they were ready to start doing work with us. But that goes back just to your point, Paul, what you were sharing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. You're a team. All your businesses want, your vendors, you, your customers, they all want to survive and thrive. You know, you need to collaborate with them to see how we can do that together.
We have a few minutes left here before we open up the line, and I want to throw out our last question for the panel today. What steps would you guys suggest taking in case we go into a recession? And so number one would be around preparing for the recession, if there's a summary, and also how to take advantage of the opportunities that a recession can bring, so the mindset is prepared for, not this, oh my gosh, this gloomy time is coming and dark clouds are gathering, but rather looking at this as it's part of a cycle and it's also a wonderful opportunity.
To me, step one is to category and understand your weakest competitors. Understand who your weakest competitors are, because they are going to be hurt first. And you want to be prepared to take advantage. Let's say they lose 50% of their customer base and they can no longer function. Well, there's still half of their customer base left. So having a real strong knowledge of your competitors, the ones that are particularly financially weak, even in good times, it's a good time to, you know, transfer customers from them to you. But as you prepare for a recession, the better knowledge you have of your competitors, particularly your competitors' weaknesses, the more likely you are to, you know, acquire their customer base during a recession.
Thank you.
One that I would have, maybe I'm going to sneak two in there. One is a war on waste internally, and we've touched on this before. Look at everything you spend and cut back ahead of the recession so that those savings go into the coffers that give you strength. The other one I'd add is to think about how you can help your customers survive the recession. Is there a different kind of product that will save them money and not take it out of your margins, but a different approach? If you really understand their pain and you can sell them something additional that helps them, those are the companies that tend to grow immediately as a recession takes hold, and that's a powerful position to be in.
Absolutely.
Yeah, this is Larry. I would come at it, I agree with that, all of that, but I would also come at it from a different angle. I think during a recession, during any difficult time, your most important customer is your internal customer, your own employees. And I've had some clients very successful when things start to slow down. People in the organization know when things are slowing down. The orders are a little smaller. They're spaced out a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yada, yada, yada. We all know it. We've been through it. I think not at all a panicky, but just a very calm, clear statement to the employee base. Hey, you read the newspapers. I read the newspaper. Well, nobody reads the newspapers, so, you know, whatever we read. And we know that we're likely to go through a slower time. Here is what we're doing in this company to be sure that we not only survive it, but we're in position to really take advantage when things pick up. And I want you to know, people want to know that the leaders have a plan. You know, they may or may not agree with every part of it, but it's fatal during difficult times for people to feel like there is no leadership. And the leaders don't know what they're doing. So I'm all for being not detailed, but create clarity within the workforce that we know what we're doing, we have a plan, and we are going to get through this. And here's how we're going to do it. And oh, by the way, here's my role and here's your role. We are a team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the customer facing, go ahead.
What a great interview question to ask. Someone that you're hiring around, share something you did during the last recession that truly benefited the organization and the customer or client.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Paul?
And I was just going to add your customer-facing employees at every level is your best source of market research. Because they're talking to them every day, and I've always trained my clients to have these people ask questions about their business and how their business is doing. And these are who else can we work with? I mean, these customer-facing, customer service salespeople, your best marketing tool and the least expensive marketing tool, right, on top of that.
So, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Good point. Yeah, it's reminding me also, during the last recession, we were getting a lot of calls from companies to do stress management workshops to keep everybody calm.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And focused also was a huge thing. Any closing thoughts before we close this portion down and open up the line?
No, I'm good.
Ready.
I've said it all.
Everybody's good? Okay. We've been asked by in the past from those attending open line to not record the once we open the line up, so I like to be respectful of that. So we're going to close this part of the program down, and we'll be right back and open up the line in case anybody wants to talk directly with our guests. But before we do that, I want to thank Larry, Rob, and Paul for being on open line again and sharing the insights of helping companies to be prepared and take advantage of this opportunity that will happen sooner or later. And you guys have so much wisdom and sage advice. And if anyone wants to reach out to Larry, Paul, or Rob, their contact information is on the screen. And so you have their phone numbers and email, and they'll be more than happy to talk with you further. So thank you all for attending Open Line. Please stand by while I turn the recording feature off, and we'll be right back, and we'll open up the line.